Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. This hour, we're going to tackle something a little bit different, which is the issue of biking, bicycling in our cities, and in Baltimore in particular. Is this city friendly to bikes? Do you ride a bicycle? Do you ride a bicycle maybe just from home to work to go out? I bet you what you don't see are kids riding bicycles to schools, but you don't see a lot of bikes in this city. We had a bicyclist killed here in Baltimore recently. Cyclists are injured all the time on their bicycles in this city. And Baltimore is not among the friendliest cities to bicyclists. We're going to talk about that this hour and ask you about your biking habits and more. You can join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on bicycling in our town here. And I want to remind you before we jump into that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, call 1-800-492-5538. And we're joined in studio by Nate Evans, City of the Baltimore City's bike and pedestrian planner. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark.
Nice to meet you. Greg Cantori is president of the board of directors of One Less Car and executive director of the Marion I. and Henry J. Knott Foundation, but he's here really in capacity as a president of the board of directors of One Less Car. Good to have you here, Greg. Welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to Facebook and throw your comments up there as well. When I gave the last underwriting announcement, it was about the University of Maryland Hospital for Children. And most people probably don't realize that the biggest killer of children in the state of Maryland is automobiles.
That's right.
And we try desperately to try to get people out of their cars into other form of transportation, though we have one of the worst transportation systems that I know of in the country here in Baltimore and in Maryland, other than the D.C. suburbs, which is a great transportation system. Where you don't have to get in your car. You can jump on your bicycle, take your bike onto the subway and do things you can't do here in Baltimore. So let's talk about what's happening in Baltimore. I know that this Sunday there is the Tour du Port coming up, right?
That's right.
That One Less Car is presenting. It's a 12, 19, 41, and 52-mile bike rides on October the 4th. And it's this huge, gigantic premier bicycle event taking place.
That's right. It's going to be the largest.
The largest.
Yeah.
That you helped create at One Less Car. But the reality is that Baltimore is a very dangerous place to bike in. It's a scary place to bike in.
It can be, yeah.
I've had friends of mine, Brendan Walsh, who bicycles everywhere everywhere he goes, refuses to bicycle anymore downtown in Baltimore because it's just too dangerous. And he's been doing it for 40 years. And I know you, Greg, I mean, you're like a madman on a bike. You bicycle from your home in Pasadena.
That's right.
All the way to Baltimore and back again every day almost.
That's right. 22 miles each way.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about what it means to be a bike-friendly city and why we are not one.
Well, we're getting there. Baltimore's definitely a whole lot better than it was even 5 years ago. Right now we've got a really great pro-cycling mayor, Sheila Dixon, who gets out there every Friday morning and rides and really rides the talk and doesn't just talk about it. We've really added a lot of bike lanes. We've got about 45 bike lane miles so far around town, whether that's a bike lane or a share route or even a signed route. And we've also got a great program going on where we've gotten a lot of bike racks around town. Parking your bike is just as important to the bike trip as it is to getting there. So this year, DOT has installed about 135 bike racks all around town, including one on-street facility in Charles Village where we took a parking space and converted it to park 10 bikes.
I mean, that's clearly progress. There's no question about it. But when you just talk about that share,
the share.
I mean, the problem with share on is, as I've seen them, is they don't really give you much room for a bike. There are also parking lanes. You got to ride through traffic. I mean, we're not exactly like expanding lanes in the city to give people room to ride.
Well, and just to be absolutely clear, the listeners understand too, is that there's bike lanes, which you see the white stripe next to the parked cars usually, and then the share rows, which basically means shared lanes with cars. And I think those are still a little confusing to some motorists.
They can be, yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't know how to use them. Basically, a share is pretty much what its name says. It's a shared lane. So it's wide enough so that a car and a bike can share that same lane, usually 13 feet wide, and safely pass each other while not necessarily providing enough space for its own bike lane, which needs to be at least 4 feet and preferably 5 feet, 5 feet wide.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, I mean, we have, let's just step backwards here. We have, when I was a kid, people rode bikes to school all the time. I mean, the percentage of students in America who bicycle to school, or walk, but bicycle to school, has declined from 50% in 1969 to less than 15% today. You know, you used to pedal up to your school, mm-hmm. whether it was a school in the suburbs, middle-class neighborhoods, inner-city neighborhoods. People rode their bikes to school. There were, you know, bike racks everywhere. You put your bike in, you went to school, you came on, you threw your books in your basket, and you took off for home again. That's gone. I mean, we are declining in the number of riders, not climbing the number of riders, it seems.
A lot of that has to do with the way America has developed its landscape. It's based on the car and not the bike or walking, or even, especially around here, around transit. So when you have more single-family homes, you're going to have a greater distance between, you know, whether you're going to school or to the store or to work. So that's going to extend the distance that you have to walk because it's based on people driving. So now it's like we're trying to retrofit the city to make those bike lanes and make those connections with even trails and transit to get it going on so that people can be more not as auto-focused.
And that's very interesting about the retrofitting is that we might say, well, our infrastructure is already in place. It might be too difficult to do. But you go and look at cities like Amsterdam and Copenhagen, cities that are much older than Baltimore, and their bicycle rider rates are in the 40% in one city and close to 60%.
40% of all transportation in Amsterdam is bicycle.
By bicycle. Can you imagine?
40%.
40%.
Right.
To put that in context, in Baltimore right now, And actually, we have seen an uptick. I actually saw the statistics recently. We've actually doubled the number of cyclists in Baltimore. That sounds huge, but it's progress. But we've gone from about 0.4% of trips to about 0.6-0.7%. So we're still less than 1%. But we've seen progress. And I think almost everyone has seen more bicycles out there the last couple of years.
But, I mean, first of all, let me ask you this. Let's hear a personal question, Greg Cantore. Talk about what you do every day and why you do it and how you do it. This idea that you pedal 44 miles a day.
On many days. Now, I do carpool on many days because I have...
You have these two kids.
Two kids.
Right.
It's
and they're too big to throw on the bicycle.
Too big to throw. And unfortunately, their schools are too far away for them to bike easily. But, I've just as of last January, I was looking at my numbers in terms of my commute miles and by bicycle, and I just surpassed 100,000 bicycle commuting miles over the last 13 years. And I do it for a lot of reasons. It's basically my workout on the way to work. And I'm so busy, I just really don't have a lot of time to go to the gym and work out. So whenever I possibly can, I'd much rather ride the bike because I'm doing two things at once. I'm getting my workout, I'm getting to work. The other thing is I'm also a lot less stressed by the time I get to work. There's nothing like a good workout. And I also don't need as much coffee. I'm already awake. I'm more productive. There's no doubt about it. I'm more productive once I've ridden my bicycle to work. Same thing goes on the way home. If you had a rough day, a lot of things going on, by the time I get home, I've forgotten it all. And it's wonderful. There's something about getting on a bicycle that I think most of your listeners will remember if they haven't done it recently. It puts a smile on your face. It's a real happiness factor to it. It's just so much fun. And you know, even with all these statistics that we're talking about, that kind of sucks the joy out of what we're talking about. The truth is that riding a bike is really a lot of fun. And that's why kids do it. And there's also a sense of independence. Even as an adult, we have much more sense of independence when you're on a bicycle. You're no longer beholden to gas stations. You can pretty much go where you want, when you want. And you don't have to worry about how much it's going to cost you. Mm-hmm. So it's really remarkable. I think for kids, going back to your statistics on the fact that kids are bicycling much less to school, that's a real loss on many fronts. Obviously, the exercise part, but then also the freedom and independence part as well. What I witnessed in Amsterdam, watching kids come home from school on their bicycles and literally holding arms. They're such great bike riders. They can ride with one hand and put their arms around each other because that's what they do as friends, side by side, chatting, and then breaking away and going in different directions on the way home or picking up some groceries or going to the library. Totally independent. They don't have to wait for mom or dad. They don't have to wait for the bus. They can leave and go when they want. And so that sense of freedom, the sense of joy is remarkable. And that's one of the reasons I do this, despite the fact that my commute is probably one of the most difficult commutes for bicyclists. It's and actually, thanks to Nate's work, has been a lot easier the last couple of years because there's some new bike lanes on my route now. But I go through industrial areas, through Curtis Bay, Brooklyn. I go through areas where there's no shoulders. I go through areas where the speed limit is close to 50 miles an hour. I cross over a bridge that's the Hanover Street Bridge, which is a very high-speed bridge with no accommodations yet for bicycles. And, you know, every day I do it, I hold on and I ride for my life, and I get across.
You just said it calmed you down. It sounds awful stressful to me.
It does. And I must admit, that part of the mm-hmm. commute is. But there's also, it's very interesting. It's every day is a sense of accomplishment. I get across that bridge. Yes, I made it. I'm feeling good. I'll keep going. And it's really a remarkable feeling versus being strapped into a seat in a car where there's no way to release the stress. You get stuck in traffic. You have to wait for the people in front of you. Can't go around them. And as I said before, I always have this sense of freedom. One of the things I was telling Nate before we started today is I have this bumper sticker on there. It says, if I'd ridden my bicycle, I'd be there by now. And one of the other reasons I ride my bike is it's actually faster in many days. It's actually faster than driving. And it takes me about an hour and 15 minutes to go my 22 miles. And I do ride fairly fast. But if there's a traffic jam, I see all the cars backed up, it's actually a good thing for me because I can actually ride my same speed and I don't have to worry about moving traffic getting in my way. It's really remarkable too because I can always know exactly when I'm going to arrive and when I need to leave. In a car, it's always, you don't know. It depends on those traffic reports. Just even coming here today, Cold Spring Lane, I had forgotten how backed up it gets between Northern Parkway,
yeah,
and also from Falls Road towards Perrin Parkway. It gets really backed up. I kept thinking if I was on my bicycle, I would have been here 10 minutes earlier. So it's a remarkable way to get around.
Did you bike over here today?
No, unfortunately, I drove too. But I normally take the bus and. Ride my bike wherever I can.
It's 410-319-8888. I'm curious if you bike in the city or where you happen to live listening to this program. If you're one of those motorists who can't stand bicycles because they get in your way and you want to talk about that as well. And this whole idea of trying to become a different kind of community, can we be like Portland, which I will describe for those of you who don't know, which has been voted the best biking city in America and the number two best biking city in the entire planet on many polls. It's a city about the size of ours. It's 533,000 people. Mm-hmm. Yet they have a huge percentage of the people in that city who bike back and forth everywhere they go. And they have lanes, not on the highways, but on many overpasses and underpasses and on most of the roads. We accommodate bicycles in places like Portland. And so how do we want a city like that? And how do we get there? We have some lovely bike trails. You can take the Gwynns Falls Trail, but it really doesn't get you to a place where it's really safe to bike from there on. How do you get over there even if you have to get from, let's say, here or Hamden or over in right where we are at Cold Spring and Hillen? How would you pedal over there in the first place? How would you get there and maybe get back safely? Your thoughts at 410-319-8888. You can go to our Facebook and log on there and talk about your biking habits. And we'll bring them here to the airwaves as well, or you can write to us at steinershow@gmail.com, and we'll get your thoughts on the airwaves here. We have with us Nate Evans, who is really really a step up that Baltimore has hired Nate Evans. He's our city's bike and pedestrian planner, which is just a remarkable idea that we even have one now working for the city of Baltimore. Just give you a little hope for the future, and maybe bigger than a little hope. I mean, it sounds so pessimistic. And Greg Cantore, who is president of the board of the directors of One Less Car. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Warren in Baltimore City. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Hi, Warren. Welcome to the show.
Good. Yeah, I think bike riding in Baltimore is improving somewhat. And I like to bike myself. The only thing about Baltimore City that I do not find too interesting is a lot of people like to ride the bikes on public sidewalks. And to me, that seems to be very dangerous for pedestrians and the bike riders. And I don't know why that's being done all the time. You know, what is there? I thought it was something preventing them from riding bicycles on sidewalks.
That's a really good point, Warren. Let's go to the man who knows the law, I guess, Nate Evans.
Right. Warren, you're right. It is actually illegal to ride your bike on a sidewalk in Baltimore. It came on the books back in the 80s, and it's something that we really kind of discourage. First of all, people riding on the sidewalk really aren't checking their speeds, and accident rates with cyclists go way up on sidewalks, because not only do you have, you know, in the street, all you have to do is look out for park car doors opening or the car that's on your left. On the sidewalk, you have to look out for opening doors, mailboxes, signs, pedestrians, kids, senior citizens. It just becomes way more treacherous on the sidewalk. So while it is illegal in Baltimore, I mean, people are still going to do it because they feel safer on the sidewalk than they do in the road.
Well, one of my producers, she's been working as a producer here for the last month and a half, so she's taking off the Antarctic next week, so she can't be with us for another few months. Christina Harrison, who's a bike rider. Both of my folks producing the show now are ride their bike more to the office than they drive. They're always riding their bikes in and out. Justin Levy and Christina Harrison. But she said, you know, people yell at her all the time, get on the sidewalk, get out of the road, you're blocking my way.
We don't have
a lot of respect for cyclists in this town.
No, and it's also respect, and that's very interesting. It also comes just from a perception and a lack of knowledge. You know, although the driver manuals and driver's ed classes talk about bicycles being vehicles, I think people very quickly forget that.
Right.
And they still remember, you know, when they were children, that's where they were. It was on the sidewalks or in the back alleys.
Right.
And forget that they're serious transportation machines. That's what they really are.
Well, let me go to the phone team. I want to talk about how we get to that place in Baltimore. And if people want to get there, 410-319-8888, do we want to become a bicycle city, a bicycle-friendly city? Can we get to a place where 25% or 30% of the citizens of Baltimore are riding their bikes to work and school? 410-319-8888. Marguerite in Baltimore, you're on the air.
I commute to work by vehicle. I work downtown Baltimore, so I take St. Paul toward Calvert every morning around 7. And there's a bicyclist who's on that route during the time when I'm commuting. And I applaud him because of the fact that he's in good shape, he's careful, and I get so angry when I see drivers, you know, fussing at him, you know, on the way. And I really think it's a good idea, and it's a good source of exercise. And I plan to get a bicycle in November. And I'm a person who's lost over 100 pounds.
Congratulations.
And I'm eating right. I'm getting cute. And I plan to get a bicycle. I plan to get a bicycle in November, and I'm not going to ride it to work. But I will be riding the paths around the park near Morgan. And to keep in shape, because it's good. I'm 61, and it pays to be physically fit. And I always enjoyed riding a bike as a kid. My first bicycle was one of those bicycles where you had the handbrake and the foot brake.
Those old Schwinns, that's right.
I was so excited about that Christmas present. Yeah, so I'm going to get a bicycle in November, and I'll be keeping fit on my bike. Keep it up.
You're one of our guardian angels out there. You really are, because you just said something that that's so remarkable that I've noticed over the years, that you've noticed the same cyclists, same place, same time, and you have a sense of protection for that cyclist. And I've witnessed and experienced this many, many times over the years, that I see the same commuters every day because I tend to ride the same time. And it actually makes my commute safer and safer year by year because we learn from each other. They learn how I move through traffic and vice versa. And I actually even have drivers who help run interference for me through intersections to make sure I get through safely.
Huh.
I have lots of motorists that wave as they go by, and you might be one of them. So I just think that's wonderful.
I think Margarita is the kind of thinking we want to try to create in a city,
right?
When it comes to bicyclists and getting to back and forth. Before we turn over to Nate Evans, let me get another caller in here at 410-319-8888. We're talking about, we have a mayor here in Baltimore who loves cycling. And she goes off every Friday morning with a bunch of folks and come join the mayor on Friday mornings. What time in the morning?
6:30. I think it's going to move up to 7:30.
From City Hall.
From mm-hmm. City Hall.
But can we really become a bicycle-friendly city? It takes a lot to do that. It takes a lot of financial investment. And can we do it here? And what are your thoughts at 410-319-8888? Trinity, you're on the air.
Ah, hello.
Hi, Trinity.
Yes. I commute every now and then with the bicycle. And the fact that the mayor rides and you have bike lanes somewhere, where, I don't know, and I've seen some of the share lanes, which are ridiculous, with cars parked on one side and you have this little space and cars flying by you on the other side. And I don't know, you know, where that safety factor is, but nothing, and none of that means anything without education of the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's a real push, I've seen things on the back of the bus, you know, grandfather bicyclist. That means nothing to people unless you get some real education through the driver's ed programs or real education or real ads that are letting folks know what they need to do as drivers to be safe for bicyclists, then it really doesn't mean anything. You put a lane there, they'll run you over in the lane because they really don't know. They haven't received any education. So that's the first step, is to get the educational process going along with, you know, putting some lanes if you have some lanes there, and especially bus drivers. Bus drivers, I'm sorry, are some of the most ignorant people you can really think of for various things. But when it comes to bicyclists, I've seen them actually, you know, a child riding a bike, they pull over on the child and force them. I ride up beside them and say, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Oh, I wanted him to get out of my way." That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. He tried to kill the child, basically, so he could pull over instead of waiting for the bike to go through.
This was an MTA bus?
This is an MTA bus. They do it all the time.
I get more complaints about MTA bus drivers than any other person, any other group. For some reason, we just need to do a little bit more education with those with that group of drivers, and really help them realize that, you know, it's not just for cars, it's not just for buses. There's roads out there for every type of transportation, including bikes.
And to emphasize what Nate's saying is that we really have to think about whether we're going to continue to be a car-centric city or a people-centric
right.
city. And if you start looking at the hierarchy of protection of people first, then the whole philosophy of road use changes. That means when someone steps into the street, traffic needs to give way. When a bicyclist is on the street, that's a human being powering a bicycle, we need to make sure that they're safe. And right now, it's not just the cyclists, but it's also the pedestrians that are put at risk, because all the time, I'm sure all of us have seen it, where even in crosswalks, a pedestrian will step in and a car will blow through the intersection despite that.
Right. Recently, the State Highway Office of Safety has started a campaign to really promote pedestrian and bike safety, especially in relation to crosswalks and, you know, how cars interact there. And to do a kickoff, we did it over by Reisterstown Road Plaza, and the mayor was there. And they did just a real quick sting where, you know, police would you know, kind of observe how traffic was coming through. And if somebody blew through the crosswalk, well, they were pulling them over and giving them a ticket. And the very first person that got pulled over was an MTA vehicle.
It seems like we have to deal with the MTA somehow here. This is just, that's utter madness. I mean, I was one of those people who was... I was almost killed by a crazy motorist on Cold Spring Lane about 2 years ago, trying to get across the street in a crosswalk mm-hmm. where they're supposed to stop.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was walking the dog with Valerie, going across the road. I'm a little deaf, so I didn't hear her. If I hadn't turned around a little bit and I heard her yell for me to stop, I'd have been gone. You know, and it's pretty frightening. But the cars really have no respect. Mm-hmm. Some drivers have absolutely no respect for either pedestrians or cyclists at all. We've become this kind of auto-centric, insane place.
It is interesting when I think all of us experience this, because this is sort of the conundrum that we're in, is that when we get into a car, our personalities change. I think that's true all universally. We tend to speed, even though we know we shouldn't. We probably get to do just some distracted driving, even though we know we shouldn't. And we may even experience various forms of road rage, you know, in terms of why is that person not moving and things like that. It's very interesting, and I think that shell that's around us creates that anonymity that allows us to get away with that behavior. When you're out in the open on a bicycle or walking, it's that face-to-face interaction. It makes it much more difficult to be rude.
So, folks, the question is, and Lawrence, you're the next caller up. We have to take a short break, so don't go away. We're going to come right back to your call as soon as we come back from this break. We're talking about Baltimore City and other communities in our listening area. Can we become bicycle friendly? Can we get people out of their cars and onto their bikes? Can we change the way we live in this community like they do in other cities, in Portland, Oregon, and many other cities around this country that become bike-friendly cities, or cities like Copenhagen, Denmark, where over 40% of the people actually commute back and forth to work. 40% of the traffic in that city are bicycles and not cars. 410-319-8888. How do we change that? Do we want to change it? What are your thoughts? We'll be right back to all of that. Lawrence, we're going to come right back to your call as soon as we return from this break. I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're talking about biking and biking in America, biking in our cities, biking in Baltimore City. Can we turn Baltimore City into a town that respects bicycles, that allows bicycles to become more and more of a major way to transport ourselves from place to place? Can that happen here? We're going to talk a bit about two events coming up to promote that in the city of Baltimore in just a minute with our two guests. Nate Evans is here. Baltimore actually has a bike and pedestrian planner who works, is a paid city worker. His name is Nate Evans, and he's here in the studio right now. And Greg Cantore, who is executive director of the Marion I. and Henry J. Knott Foundation. That's his day job, but his other job is president of the board of directors of One Less Car. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Go on over to Facebook and go to the Mark Steiner Show page, and we'll bring your thoughts on that way. We'll get to some interesting comments on Facebook in a minute. But first, let's go right to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Lawrence, you're on the air.
Mark, I think Baltimore not only is ready, but I think it's time for Baltimore to take the leadership in having a huge, artistic, innovative bicycle festival, you know, and do a history of bicycles. And, you know, decorate them and paint them. And back in the old days, we used to have bicycles, but we had to have license. And, you know, every kid was proud to take his bicycle on the street. Not only was it a safety bonus, because now they respect the road, you know, by having license. But I think that, you know, we should try to, like, make it colorful, interesting, come out with a new license plate, you know, and start a new campaign, teach kids about how to be safe, you know, because that's the whole thing is, it's an art form, it's transportation, it's a lot of things. It's innovative, you know, but the other thing is, we have to reinvent it. Talk to you.
Well, Nate, why don't you start that off, Nate Evans?
I couldn't agree more. You know, biking really is so many different things. It's not just transportation and recreation. But it is an art form. You know, you see so many different kinds of bikes, whether you're on a fixie, a roadie, mountain bike, you know, tandem, folding, you know, even an old penny farthing bike. And to get people out there riding and showing off their different styles of bikes is such a great idea. In fact, we're looking at doing that coming up October 24th, section of Roland Avenue between Northern Parkway and Cold Spring Lane. It's going to be closed to cars, and it's just going to be available for anybody that wants to ride their bike.
When is that again?
October 24th.
I think it's actually the 5th.
25th?
Yeah, the Sunday.
Yeah, the Sunday. That's right.
That's right. It's a 3-day festival.
Right. And that's part of the 350.org, where it's a worldwide movement to promote sustainability worldwide. And so half of Roland Avenue will be closed, and you know, folks can come out, ride their bike, walk, rollerblade, you know, do some yoga in the street, whatever you feel like. It's we're going to turn the street into a park.
Lawrence, I hope you come and do that, because I think you'll really re-experience some of that art you're talking about out there. And another event, of course, that is fairly well known is the Kinetic Sculpture Race the Visionary Art Museum puts on every year through downtown. And that's a real form of bicycle art.
Totally.
There's also your event coming up.
And then, of course, we have the Tour de Port on this Sunday, starting at 7 o'clock in the morning, and those distances of 12 to 50-some miles. So we have some distances for everyone.
We have some bikers who want to talk about their personal experience pedaling in this town. Let's see what they have to say at 410-319-8888. And Betty, you're on the air. Betty, you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. I live in the Forest Park area. And the streets are narrow. Some of the streets have parking on both sides. Some of them are one way. But I really cringe because some of the cyclists, when they get stop signs, they don't stop. They're riding erratically, they're doing wheelies, and a lot of times when I'm driving around in my area, I just pull over on the side and let them go, because I don't want to hit anyone, and I don't want to create any incidents. But I think the people who ride the bicycle should also be trained on how to ride them in traffic. No weaving in and out, no doing tricks. Just ride your bicycle, ride with the traffic, and be safe. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Betty.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Betty. That's a real problem that we have is cyclists think that because they're not in a car, they don't have to obey the rules of the road, and that's completely false. They got to obey stop signs, stop signals, yield right away to pedestrians. They need to do everything that a car does and then some, because they have less protection. So, you know, we go out on these rides, you know, with the mayor, and sometimes I'm the only one stopping at stop signs and looking both ways, you know, and then stopping at a stoplight. Because one of the stigmas that cyclists have in this town, I mean, we're not going to break through until, you know, we're not going to be treated equally until we act equally. So there really is education needs to be done on cyclists to obey the rules of the road. And, you know, that'll go a long way.
There are, and unfortunately, it's still few and far between, but there is a basic bicycle course that's offered at a lot of the community colleges and some of the other universities, and it's called Effective Cycling, and it's a one-day, and even though most of us feel that we know how to ride a bike, you'd be amazed how much you'll learn at one of these classes. Mm-hmm. They'll show you how to do emergency braking, basic bike maintenance, how to swerve safely around an obstacle, and also the basic traffic rules. And it's everyone who goes through these classes is amazed at how much they learn, and it's something I wish we could expand, but it's right now just a couple instructors that are available to do the teaching.
410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
For you.
Hi, Clarence. You're on the air.
I just wanted to call in. I mean, this is amazing, because I was just calling a friend of mine about biking this Sunday. Sorry, not the Tour de Port, but another ride.
At least you're out there.
But I have done the Tour de Port. It's fantastic. I love the cobblestone streets at you know, down at South Point. You know, rattling my teeth out. You know, but it's a lot of nice fun ride. But what I wanted to call about was the you know, thanks for the Rails to Trails. I'm trying to hit just about every last one of them. I've done the WOND, the CNO, the Crescent Trail down in DC. Then up here, you got the BNA. The NCR Trail. I've even gone up to Pennsylvania. We've even got a little bike group together and stuff like that out of a ski group that I belong to. And it's just a lot of fun. I just, you know, tell everybody, like the lady said before, she's going to get a bike. Get it, you know, as fast as you can. You know, we're talking about people on the, you know, on the streets and stuff like that. Matter of fact, I've been riding again, let's put it that way. I've rode when I was a kid, then stopped for about 20 years and picked it back up again because some friends of mine did it. And I haven't gotten off it yet, bought another bike, but now I have two. And, you know, it's a fantastic thing. You see families out there, like you said, all the different types of bikes. Everybody's friendly to one another. Somebody's pulled over to the side just to take a break. It's like, you okay? You all right? You're fine? You know? And
right.
it's a whole different lifestyle, you know, and it's just great. I just love it, you know. And, you know, I just can't say enough about it. I get psyched. Matter of fact, I just put some new tires on my bike. I'm ready to get out and, you know, get them warmed up again, you know. So
right. You know your trails.
Yeah. Like I said, I've been on all of them. You know, it's just great. I mean, I love the Rail to Trail program. It's fantastic. I mean, you get out there and you commune with nature. I mean, some of them go as short as 9 to 10 miles to as long as, what, the WOND is, what, 78 miles one way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got some trails that people camp on, you know.
Right.
So, and then the NCR Trail, the one that leads out of up in the Towson area.
Right, to Pennsylvania,
you know,
back.
Yeah, they're going to extend that, you know. Once they go up to York, they're going to hang a left, as you know, a bike shop owner told me, and head out to Pittsburgh eventually. And you know, I've just watched that trail just blossom, and more people out there on it, and it's just fantastic. You know, get out there, ride your bike.
Thanks so much.
Okay, have a good.
I'm glad you joined us. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Let me read something that came on the Facebook here. I know people are writing on Facebook, and some emails are coming in as well. Chris Merriam wrote in. What we need is separated bike lanes on city streets, and for that, you must take away some room for cars and give it to bikes, which few politicians in the city would propose unless they enjoy being out of a job. Specifically, I mean to design streets from left to right, sidewalk, parking lane, driving lane, parking lane, curb, bike lane, sidewalk. It can be done, but you have to take space away from cars.
I've actually looked at that a couple times where we can... you know, put in the separated bike lane where, you know, you got a bike lane and then like a little median strip, you know, so there's a buffer zone in between the cars and the bikes. In fact, when we redesigned Hanover Street down through the Cherry Hill area, it's got a 6-foot buffer between the bike lane and the travel lane. And we took a whole car lane to do that.
That's right. And just to give you a point on that is that the entire lane disappeared and there was no riot. It's amazing. In fact, I've actually had a couple of people comment and says, you must have been responsible for that bike lane. And I said, well, I'm definitely one that uses it all the time. But it's interesting because there are many, many roads in Baltimore, and Nate knows what the traffic count is on the roads that don't require as many lanes as they do. They're under capacity. And so when you take a lane away, no one really notices. So there is that possibility.
Well, I mean, let's push a little further what Chris was saying. I mean, we have an email here from Mitch Maltese writes in. Mitch writes in that I used to be a bike messenger in both D.C. and Baltimore. Baltimore is by far the most dangerous city I've ever ridden in. Half the drivers give you space. The other half want to run you down. Sharrows are pointless in most locations as cars use them as an additional turn lane. We need designated full lanes like D.C. has and need traffic calming and enforcement for it all to work. I mean, let's talk for a minute really serious about what it would take to make a city like Baltimore a bike-friendly city that you could actually, I mean, do that in. You'd have to really expand. You would have to take lanes away from automobiles. You have to have designated places for bikes to ride on either side. I mean, you'd have to really change that. You'd have to have MTA buses equipped so that you can bring your bike onto the bus.
We've already got that done.
But not all of them.
Yes, all of them.
All of them now.
All bikes.
All of them.
Which is critical. Yeah. And that was critical because if even one bus...
I stand corrected.
This is great. This is great, though, because it is a big change. And if even one bus shows up without a bike rack and you need to use it, then you're out of luck. So they all have them, and they all appear to be well-maintained, and they seem to be working. I've seen people using them, which was great.
I use it quite a bit. And, you know, it's really easy to put your bike right on there. It takes not even 10 seconds.
And what you're talking about, Mark, is the concept, the technical term is complete streets. it means that whenever we make changes, restriping or resurfacing a street, that we look at it in a complete way for pedestrians, for bicyclists, as well as motorists and buses. And we work on accommodating the pedestrians and bicyclists much more than we have ever had in the past. So as we do that, street by street, we start to increase the infrastructure, which is why when you go up to New York, you'll see dramatic changes now.
Right. We were talking about New York during the break. Yeah. Talk a bit about what's going on in New York City.
Well, it's almost breathtaking. In just the last 4 or 5 years, I don't even know how the statistics on here, but I know the number of bike lane miles is tremendously greater than it has been in the past.
They have about 280 miles.
280 miles. And they have a lot of separate bike paths that are actually off the grid altogether. There are separate paths as well, which have never there before. They have the Summer Streets program, which they're running every year, which I think this last summer was 4 Saturdays in a row, which was an area just for bicyclists and pedestrians and skateboarders and so on, an 8-mile section. They are looking at laws. They're looking at more facilities, and it's just amazing how many more facilities and infrastructure changes are happening in New York.
So to do that, I mean, if you take cities like that I think I was just reading about today, that in San Francisco, Seattle. Seattle has dedicated $245 million over, I forget, X amount of years to institute bike lanes, to create safe places for bikes to ride. I mean, it takes a real effort on the part of a city to do that. I mean, you know.
And the will to do that ought to be for everyone. This is an interesting point. It's not just for bicyclists. It's actually, if you think about it, more for motorists as well. Because for everyone who's on a bicycle, that's one less motorist in front of you. If you think of it that way. And so we're actually partners on that. If you really, and this is the one less car philosophy, is that it's not about eliminating cars. It's about getting more people to do alternative ways of getting around, which means that when you do have to take your car, like coming over to the studio tonight, you don't have to sit in traffic.
This is a fairly lengthy comment, but let me read it from a listener, Chris Delaporte, who wrote in on Facebook. And by the way, you can start the discussion on Facebook. It's picking up now on Facebook, the discussion about bicycles in our city that we have on the Mark Steiner page, and you can join it. He writes in, because of its many close parallel streets, Baltimore can create bike streets that weave through the city and do not necessarily at all points in the city have to be in contest for use of the streets with greater traffic. But as usual, if we're going to do something like this correctly, the undertaking must have standing within government and not be a stepson to some greater, larger endeavor. It must be sanctioned, well-planned, funded, be a public works project that is comprehensive, driven by data, demographics, and solid public response. It can't be frivolous, not of second or last thought. It must be worthwhile to consider a separate standalone governance entity, a trail and bikeways commission, to plan for all the trails and bikeways in the city, with the Departments of Transportation and Public Works, and in some arrangement of common sense unity, constructing and maintaining the system. All this must be accomplished by involving and nourishing the numerous private, nonprofit interests and clubs that currently clash and nourish the vast echelons of walkers, runners, and bikers who right now already add pepper to the salt of our customary modes of transportation.
Wow, let's sign them
That's
up.
Heavy. Well, we've got a lot of that going on in place already. Like, we have the Mayor's Bike Advisory Committee, which is a citizen council that I meet with on a regular basis and just kind of bounce ideas off each other about what I can do to make biking better and how I can. And then I can always ask them for what roads do you want to see bike lanes on. So we've got that component in place. And then we're also doing, we're putting in biking as part of every single transportation project we have going on, whether it's the Orange Cone resurfacing project or any kind of streetscape. We're working it in with traffic mitigation agreements. And we're even looking at putting in bike facilities with the construction of the Red Line. So we're looking at it comprehensively.
I mean, to make this thing work, it does take an effort that's huge, that changes the whole nature of government does its work. I mean, it takes the Department of Planning to change things, for transportation to change things. I mean, Tony Hawkins once said to me that he thought, and he's a serious businessman, he used to be a vice president of Ralph's company, and he's not like a pie-in-the-sky people like Mike Hughes, you or me being, but that which I don't think we are, but that he said, in order for Baltimore to work, you have to have satellite parking all around the city. So people don't have to drive in the city. Right. They can park, and they can pedal in, take a bus in.
Perfect.
And you're changing. We have to really think in different ways,
Mark,
if we're going to change the nature of the city.
You're hitting on something that it, most of your listeners have probably noticed, is that we seem to be on a parking garage building binge.
Insane.
Right now. It's insane. And we cannot suburbanize the city. And that's what we're trying to do with these parking garages. You know, Lake Mason got 1,500 new spaces in their new garage, 1,500 places for cars. Now, to counteract that, there is already a movement saying that we'd like to go ahead. Lake Mason's working, understand, with the city on looking at ways to increase alternative transit modes to their new offices, because they realize what kind of an impact that is and how good it could be for their employees on that. But that's exactly what we need to do. It's zoning as well as planning and so on. Right now, if you build a building, you're required to have a certain number of parking spaces. That just encourages driving. So what if we were to look at that and change that percentage?
Well, we need our parking maximums, you know, the maximum right. amount of parking spaces available, and like start looking at bike minimums, like,
right.
you know, whether it's based on square footage or number of employees or, you know, what type of land use it is.
We're hoping to see basically legislation written, Baltimore City Code perhaps changed, where things like that happens, where when there is a new building that there's going to be bike facilities as a part of that component, perhaps even showers for the employees to use, not just for the cyclists but for mm-hmm. the runners, because some people may not cycle but they want to go for a run during the day, and that's good for the company, good for the employees. There is a lot that we can do, and you mentioned that satellite parking.
Right.
You know, at first that sounds a little, you know, wow, that sounds difficult, but anyone who's ever done a park and ride, which I did for many years going down to D.C., loved it. It was a wonderful mm-hmm. way to go.
Just humorously, before you did, one more serious thought on here, before the two of our listeners wrote in, Nicole writes in, I'm such a klutz. Why encourage fate by riding a bike in the city?
I got the answer.
Ed Humphrey says, in my suicidal youth, I rode bikes everywhere. You couldn't pay me enough to ride a bike in Baltimore today. So what were you going to say, Greg?
Well, somewhat. There actually are tricycles, adult tricycles, and not just the upright ones. So if you are – and I'm saying that half seriously, because there are people who have balance issues, and frankly, you can't fall down when you're on a tricycle. You eliminate one of the major dangers on a bicycle with a tricycle, and there's many out there.
Let's see if we can slide some more callers in here. 410-319-8888. We're going to have time for one more. Jeff, you're on the air. Jeff, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Well.
You know, I was listening to that clip to tell him, and I think the guy made a good point with suburbanizing the city. But I think the big problem is, you know, you got people who can go out to the county and park for free, and these parking spaces downtown are just charging money. And you might not think that, say, $8 for an entire day is something that people just sneeze about, but, you know, people simply are not particularly in this time not going to do it. So I think, you know, other than already dealing with the citizens of the city.
There's some real bad feedback on whatever, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I think other than just dealing with the citizens of the city, you're not going to get much headway because, you know, I guess starting back from Schaefer, where his whole idea was to evacuate those that live in the city and bring in people with a lot of money. You can't really get all of the people who live in the city out, so you're always going to have what you got here. And I would think that maybe subsequent administrations would like concentrate on the citizens of the city and not try to bring in other people to become citizens. I think that'll probably be the ultimate solution.
Well, we're going to have a show later this month on should we make the city smaller rather than larger? And that could go right to your question. I want to just, before we run out of time, I want to thank you all both for being here today. Greg Cantore, president of the board of directors of One Last Car, and Nate Evans, our city's bike and pedestrian planner. You want to learn more about biking in this town, go to baltimorecity.gov/bike. Is that the right place?
That's it.
And on October the 4th, this Sunday?
This Sunday. Go to onelesscar.org. Again, it's onelesscar.org.
And come down to Tour de Port.
Tour de Port.
And enjoy a day of biking, and you want to check both those things out. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Mark. My pleasure.
Thanks for trying to make the city a better and more livable place.
It's a lot of fun.
On the way out the door, I want to remind you all to be sure to get your tickets to WEEA's first homecoming cruise. Join us for a night of fun and games at WEEA's Cotton Club Casino Fun Night Cruise aboard the Spirit of Baltimore, Thursday, October the 8th from 7 to 10 p.m., sailing from the Inner Harbor. Your ticket price includes dinner and a special performance from soulful jazz vocalist Gene Karn. A portion of your ticket will benefit WEAA, so don't miss the boat. You can call 410-727-3113 or 1-800-695-BOAT. That's 1-800-695-2628. Or log on to weaa.org and join the fun that evening. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Maryland State's Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers, Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Christina Arison, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Devin Finley. We want to say thank you so much to Christina Arison for the last month of working as a volunteer producer here and helping us put this show on the air for the last month and a half. She's heading off the Antarctic for a few months, and we'll be back to work with us again in February. We wish her great luck and bon voyage. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.